for Inclusive Childcare welcomes you to Inclusion Matters. We share resources and information to support quality childcare for all children. By partnering with early childhood professionals, parents, grandparents, and other caregivers, we work together to help every young child thrive. And welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast from the Center for Inclusive Childcare. I'm Priscilla Weigel, the Executive Director, and I am joined in our next episode by Helene Pearson, who is the Director of Agape Child Development Center in North Minneapolis. And she is a strong partner of ours in other ways. She has been part of our Early Childhood Leadership Development Cohort. She is part of our mentor group, and she also is part of the supports that NAS provides to early childhood educators in North Minneapolis. And today, Helene is joining me to just share some lived experience in a setting that is one in early childhood that I think many of you can relate to, where there are a lot of things going on with children and families and staff. And the key to providing support as a leader in that setting, as a director, is to really have a good trauma-informed lens and to understand the way you support your team helps your team support the children and families you serve. So we are grateful to Greater Twin Cities United Way and their 80 by 3 initiative for the funding to provide this additional podcast in a series of wonderful resources that we have been able to develop and build on our 80 by 3 tab. So certainly check out our website. There are lots of things there that can help you in the work that Helene and I are going to be discussing today in our conversation. So I hope that you enjoy it. Take a listen and join the conversation. I'm honored today to be joined by Helene Pearson, who is the director of Agape Child Development Center. She is busy and growing her program. So Helene, welcome.
Thank you, Priscilla, for having me. I am excited to be here. I've never done a podcast before, so I'm a little nervous, but I'm excited to have conversation about something I'm very passionate about.
And in that conversation today is going to be topics that really focus around how do you build your team and support your team in a time in early childhood where there's a lot of other factors swirling around us, staffing issues, family needs, kids with just differing needs after COVID, all sorts of things. And so I'm really glad that you're here to just share your perspective as a director and some of the things that we're going to talk about. One of them starting out is, what is your greatest joy as a leader in an early childhood center?
What brings me the greatest joy is watching my scholars grow. Also, the growth of the families and the growth in my staff. Seeing a scholar master a skill that they've been working on, something as simple as tying a shoe. Hearing the parents say that they feel safe, they feel loved. There's love here. There's love here. And that's what agape means. It means love. It's just a reminder of what we do. It does matter. And how we do it matters even more.
I'm so grateful to have had Helene Pearson's perspective of the day-to-day in a program that does serve a lot of children who have a variety of needs, which we see that out in childcare pretty much everywhere we go. And some of the things that we like to really encourage the educators that we support through our coaching or other work to really be aware of is thinking about some of those trauma-informed practices that are essential. One being safety and trust. Helene talks a lot about that in our conversation, how providing that safe space where her staff feels safe and also the families feel safe to share their needs and concerns, their worries, their fears, and to know that no matter what, people in that space are caring and care enough about them to listen and be there. And that builds safety and trust. And that's really an important tool for helping children understand that they're going to be okay. And that even in those hard times, there's grownups who care about them. When you think about, you know, think back over the last few years for you in your role as an early childhood leader, what have you noticed as far as the needs of your team and those teachers that are supporting the scholars in your classrooms? What are your team members needing and what's necessary as you think of how you support them?
So what my team needs is more than just the trainings. I mean, the technical trainings are fine, but they need emotional support themselves, consistency and clarity, and a safe space. And then also professional growth opportunities. And I also think they need a leader that listens, because early educators are caring a lot. You know, they have their personal struggles, they have the needs of their families, and then they have the needs of the families that we serve. And so it's not just a scholar. Sometimes it's the mom, sometimes it's the sibling, sometimes, you know, it goes beyond. And so, and then you add that to the daily demands of the classroom, it could be very overwhelming. And so I am really excited that we are partnering with NAS because we provide therapy. We have a mental health specialist that comes once a week, and we make sure that the classrooms are covered so that my staff can get one-on-one time if they need to talk or they need to get it out or they need some advice. So we make sure that we have some strong systems and structure in place, but that there's also accountability.
Lovely. That's so important. And as you were listing the things that your staff needs, it sounded so parallel to what children need for success as well, and what you had just talked about earlier in our conversation. So that is really true when you think of a workplace environment, you know, especially with those taxing and heavy loads that the early childhood professional carries, they do need some place, someone who is willing to just be there to listen and that feels safe, that they can share, even when they're frustrated about their job. I remember when I was a young teacher, I would go into the executive director's office and she would just hand me a box of Kleenex and close the door. And I would just have my time where I just needed to let it out. As you said, I think you even said, let it out or get it out. And that was so helpful to me to know that I could do that. And then I could go back and get back there with the kids again and start things all over again. But it's so important to know that you have someone in your corner. And it sounds like that's something that you're noticing is really critical for your team as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
Another piece that we talked about in our conversation was just understanding some of those trauma responses, looking at those behaviors, stepping back and saying, why is that child showing me this? What are they trying to tell me? What has happened today or last night or last week or is happening in their life that really is causing some anxiety or overwhelm or is creating that trauma response because it's a trigger that has happened from early on in their lives and their body is remembering something that was scary or overwhelming. So watching those behaviors, taking time to observe, talking with your team members and your colleagues, really thinking it's not just that child trying to make my life challenging or difficult, it's them trying to communicate something that they need with me through their behavior. When you talk about the classroom environment and the challenges, what are some things that you're noticing with your team as far as consistent challenges that you're feeling the need to support as a leader?
We serve families that have complex stories. They're layers. We also have staff with some real life stressors. And then we have scholars who need stability and nurturing. And so just, you know, playing the balancing act. Another challenge is managing the emotional weight of the work, because it can be very taxing. and it could take a toll on you, from the staffing shortages to the unexpected crisis to supporting a team member, to supporting our families. We just had a mom come in just in pieces.
Oh my.
Yeah. And so to support her and support the other scholars, because of course they're like, where's my brother? I just want baby brother, but baby brother's in the hospital. And so how do you, you know, navigate that? I got to go to work. I got to pay bills. And so who's going to stay at the hospital? And so of course we have to take a pause because we have to address that, because that scholar doesn't care about their ABCs. They want to know what happened to baby brother. Like, and so we just have to remember that there's also going to be ongoing challenges, you know, like the compliance paperwork and policies and this and that, and maintaining our quality care. But we have to keep in mind that this is a heart work. And when they pull at the heartstrings, it's nothing that we can do but deal with it. And so, yes, I have stuff that I have due today, but that had to go to the back burner because I have to support this crying mother who does not know what to do.
Right, right. And the fact that she knows that she can come through those doors of agape and share that very, very raw emotion and that overwhelming feeling and that fear that she's feeling, and also share that and know that your team is addressing it and understanding it and taking a moment to really support that family and those scholars in the day-to-day problems, because those are big deals. And for a young child to have to navigate that, the emotional strain that they're going to show us might come out in some behaviors. It might come out in crying behavior. It might come out in aggressive behavior. All of those things, those messages that they're sending us, can come out different ways for different kids.
Absolutely. And so we tell our families all the time during orientation, if anything changes at home, whether you think the scholar is impacted by it or not, anything, you have to let us know, because then we can give the extra love or support that that scholar might need so that it doesn't turn into a behavior problem. You know, that I can say, oh, so-and-so is going to be my line leader today because he is doing a great job. But I know in the back of my mind, he needs to be the line leader because he might need to hold my hand today.
Yep.
Whatever the reason is. We tell them, and we try to make that relationship very plain and open from the beginning so that it's a partnership. We're here to support you, support your child.
Another piece that we discussed in our conversation was emotional support and regulation, and how that emotional support, Helene talked about her hugs, and sometimes people like hugs, sometimes they don't like hugs. It depends on the individual. But if folks in her setting and the children in her setting are very used to that, and that's her way of providing some calm, some deep pressure, some regulation, because that body close together with you is providing some of those deep pressure points in that child, in that family member, in that staff member, all of that, it's helping you regulate and it's helping the child regulate. Some children don't like to be touched when they're upset. And so offering them other ways to calm their bodies through some of that physical activity that we talked about in our conversation, getting outside for that physical and mental well-being, that physical activity is so important to help them have all over wellness and high activity level. If it's happening inside all the time, sometimes it's not appropriate. And so let's get kids to a place where they can run and play and feel good about just being active. And that's what we want to model as well. When you think of how you support your staff as you're training new staff members, are there things that you try to model and instill that are just kind of the agape way? Is there something that when you hire a new staff, or especially the seasoned staff that you have, what do they know about how you show up for work when you work at agape?
That's one of my questions in the interview. Like, how do you show up on your rough day? when you've had a long night and you've cried most of the night, or you didn't get any sleep for whatever reason, because life is life and for everybody, how do you show up? Because my scholars need someone that can put all of that to the side. Get it out before you start. Come in, sing a song, put on some music, dance around, whatever you need to do, because they need you healthy, healed, and whole. I just try to make sure that I lead with empathy, that I am always happy. I am a hugger. I really think that that is my gift. And I think that HUG stands for Helene's Untouchable Gift, because I think a hug can sometimes cure all. Kind of like love cures all. I think you can feel the love in my hugs. And so with that, that's how I lead. Sometimes if I'm not having the best morning, I'll stand at the front desk to get the hugs and the smiles from those little toddlers that when you see them, their face lights up and they're running towards you, open arms. And I'm running towards them, open arms, because I need it too. And so just to see them smile and lay their head on your shoulder or hug your leg. So that's how I lead. I lead with empathy and I lead with love, because I need everybody to know that life is life, but they need us. Our scholars need us. And it's okay to let them know that they're not alone in whatever it is that they're going through. You know, we have our therapists, we have people that we can call, we have OASIS, our organization. That's our one-stop shop. Anytime you're in any type of trauma or crisis, they're the one-stop shop. And so we can call some of the therapists or employees at OASIS to get some help. They can come down. Eventually we'll be in one building, but right now they're like 3 minutes away, but they'll come to us.
That's helpful to, I think about shouldering the burden of carrying the load in early childhood classroom settings, because there are days, I think, where you feel like no matter what you present, or as far as an activity, or you might have group time and nobody's interested, and there's just, you know, you feel frustrated because nothing's working the way you had planned. And it sounds like in your setting, it's okay to have those days to go, okay, so I guess we're not doing that activity today. Maybe we're going to shift gears and do something else, something that maybe calms everyone, or maybe gets people just to change their pattern a little bit if they're having a lot of aggression or frustration. But allowing for that flexibility, I think, probably is something that it sounds like you model for your team, to see that perfection is not the rule. It's really about relationship.
It is definitely about relationship. And I've learned very recently that nothing is constant but change. So as much as we want to stick to our schedule, if our scholars are saying, nope, we're not doing that today, and they're giving you pushback, okay, let's take a break. Let's take a break. We're not going to have circle time, like I think we talked about at the training. We're not going to have circle time sitting on the carpet. Let's go to the house area. And everybody has something in their hand. Like, we're going to do something different. But if you're listening while we're doing the different thing, I'm okay. I'm okay. Yeah, I'm okay. We have to have, I don't like to sit down for a long period of time. So I cannot expect a toddler to do the same. And we just have to constantly remind ourselves, what's more important than sitting down still like robots, or them learning? If that learning means they're standing up, they're kneeling, they're laying flat, or they're laying on their tummy, they're learning. That's all we want, is the learning. So you have to be flexible.
You do, because you want them engaged. And sometimes engagement looks different for different kids and different scholars, as you say. It's not a one size fits all. And I think that that's what we as educators really need to help ourselves be okay with, and give ourselves a little grace on that flexibility. And some days, especially like these days when the snow is falling in Minnesota and it's cold outside, we're going into a cold snap now. And so playground time and outside gross motor time might be limited. And that's going to change the way the children show up in the classroom, because they're not going to have their typical routines for expending energy. And so being creative and being flexible as that educator, as that lead in the classroom, that's so important.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree. It definitely, they look forward to their outside time. And so we're actually, we've reached out to most of our friends of Agape because we're trying to get every scholar a pair of snow pants and snow boots, hats and gloves, because we want them to go outside, even if it's just for 2 minutes. I mean, with the weather permitting, even if it's just two minutes, we catch a snowflake and we come back in. Or our toddlers were so excited last winter. After we shoveled the snow, they were able, and the snow was maybe higher than them, and they were able to go and just pat the snowbanks. Like, it was like, they just was like, oh my God, like they had never, I love the snow. I absolutely love the snow. And I'm like, it's warm enough. Take them outside. I mean, it took longer to get them all together and dressed than it did to, you know, then they stayed outside, but it was just those 3 minutes that they were out there. They had a good time, but it's just the light and happiness and joy that's on their faces when they got to touch the snow and to see the snow and feel the snow and throw the snow. I mean, it was just, they wanted to lay in the snow, but the banks were actually almost as tall as they were, the snow piles that we had. But they, you know, yeah. Love the snow. And I think that everybody should get out because that makes a difference. That does make a difference. Getting that breath of fresh air.
And it's so true what you said, where it almost takes longer to get them ready than what you actually spend outside.
Yes.
But which many people be frustrated by and perhaps would give up and say, nope, too bad. I'm not doing it. But it's very important, as you said, for our own well-being, for the teacher's well-being, and for the scholar's well-being. Well, I think that as our conversation has gone through our time together, Helene, some of the things that stand out for me about those key practices when we look at really being trauma-informed and supportive as a leader to your early childhood teams, connection, relationship, hugs, and caring for the families, for the children, and also being flexible to be willing to change things to meet the needs as they come in. And I think that that's the beauty of a quality program is true supportiveness to whatever those unique needs are for each individual family and each individual child and each individual staff.
Absolutely. They need to feel supported. They need to feel supported, by a listening leader. And it makes a difference on how they show up. I want my staff to come every day excited and ready. So yeah, it's easy when they like, okay.
That's true. It's easy when everybody feels like they're supported. Mm-hmm. That's true. It does. It makes you want to come because someone's going to miss you when you're not there. And there's going to be a big hole in that team. Positive sense of belonging is such an essential tool for all of us in early childhood to provide that to every child that walks through the doors in our settings. That sense that you matter, I'm so glad you're here. No matter how hard yesterday was, today is a fresh new start. And that reinforcement of that caring, that sense of you are part of this community and you're important to me and it's important that you're here and I'm glad you are. And I care about you, I care about your family, and I care about what's happening, no matter what that is. But sending that message to a child that they belong, that they are a part of your early childhood community is such a beautiful gift. And we can also do that by empowering them through offering choices and letting them know that sometimes they get to be in charge and they get to make decisions. We don't have to do everything my way. Offering them times when it's safe to offer choices. What should we have for snack today? Oh, you know what? This book seems kind of long for right now and we don't have a lot of time. What's a short book we could read? Who has an idea? Offering children opportunities to be able to provide their own next thing is such a wonderful tool for building healthy development long-term. These early years are so critical. They're the beginnings of their pathway for learning and development, and we have the opportunity to usher them along and nurture them along in the most positive way. We can take that as a very, very awesome responsibility and really be aware of how important we can be in that partnership with the families we serve and the children we care for. So thank you for listening to this podcast, and we are grateful to 80 by 3 for allowing us to build additional resources on our website, on our 80 by 3 tab. Please check them out. They all are really useful, and we're really proud of them. Thank you for listening to Inclusion Matters. For more information and a wide range of resources, visit inclusivechildcare.org. You'll find information on our coaching services and support on topics such as healthy child development, strategies for encouraging positive behavior, and guidance on including children with unique social, emotional, and learning needs, and much more.